nutshell. But the Declaration's author was not a greed is good kind of guy. Self-love, Jefferson wrote to a friend 38 years after the Declaration, self-love is no part of morality. Indeed, it is exactly its counterpart. It is the sole antagonist of virtue, leading us constantly by our propensities to self-gratification, in violation of our moral duties to others. Edison goes on to cite those times in our nation's history when we overly indulged these self-gratifying propensities. But he notes that in each case, an economic crisis coupled with moral disapproval righted the ship of state and returned the common life to some sort of equilibrium. Today, it would seem that we have the economic crisis, all right, without the moral disapproval. Thanks to the 60s, says Anderson, when a grand bargain was forged between the counterculture and the establishment, between the forever young and the moneyed, we have all become shamelessly selfish. All includes the indulgent self-expression and hedonism of each succeeding generation of youthful masses. And all includes the unshackled capitalists who have been free to indulge their own animal spirits with fewer and fewer fetters in the forms of regulation, taxes, or social opprobrium. Anderson, by the way, goes on to say that he was brought up in the 50s in Omaha. And that in Omaha in the 50s, even if you had money, you would never even think of building a huge house. And if you owned a company, it would be beyond imagining also that you would want to make 200 times or 400 times more than what the people who work for you make. He said, there were many things wrong with those times. But when you look back on those times, they were a time when individualism and the common weal had some way of staying a little bit better in balance. Well, Jefferson anticipates our present predicament in the same 1814 letter, writing that our tendencies towards selfishness, where liberty and our pursuit of happiness lead us, require correctives which are supplied by education and by the moralist, the preacher, and the legislator. On this Independence Day, Anderson concludes, I'm doing my small preacherly bit. So on the Sunday after Independence Day, I will attempt to do the same. I turn first to Paul and to the part of Paul that we will be turning to every Sunday until the summer is done. Paul, who wrestles mightily with the intersection of human freedom and love in his letter to the Galatians. Here, Gerhard Abeling hears Paul to be saying in echoes of Jesus' own words in the Gospel of John, the Christian freedom is freedom to love and therefore freedom to serve. Because almost every commentary I read about the fruit of the Spirit said, when you're dealing with love, if you want to really know the content of love for Paul, go back to 1 Corinthians 13. I think I don't need to read it. I think most of you know it by heart, but nevertheless. So, love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. Or as my favorite translation says, love never quits. Here in Hosea is the love that never quits. Here in these words, we know the love that is the complete vulnerability of the Creator toward the creature. The free and unconditional decision to pursue a relationship, much like the parabolic shepherd that seeks the one lost sheep. For how long? Until he finds him. Here is a love that necessarily grants the beloved perfect freedom. It does not coerce the other to love in return, because coercion would cease to be love. God is the lover who stands rather helplessly at the end of the road, to borrow another parable, waiting for the beloved to come to herself. You also could say that freedom as it is exercised as liberty by the beloved can only end badly. Idolatry usually ends this way. When we put our trust in someone or something or some cause that cannot bear the weight of human destiny, we find ourselves in what feels like the hand of fate, a fate that is usually a bondage of our own choosing. Ephraim herds the wind, says Hosea. They multiply falsehood and violence. They make a treaty with Assyria, and oil is carried to Egypt. Nothing much has changed. Still, the God who is love pursues us, seeks us until God finds us, helplessly waits for us to turn in freedom toward home. Freedom is freedom only as love. Love is love only as freedom. That is the heart of the matter. If such love is glimpsed by Israel in the words of the prophet Hosea, then we confess that the same love is made manifest to us in him who loved us while we were yet sinners, and has commanded us to love one another. So in the second place, Paul cannot say what love is without saying Jesus. He knows only Christ can make unconditional lovers out of otherwise selfish human beings, and he knows this because Christ has done that for him. Hence he offers no definition of love, but instead turns us toward the one who alone is love. Substitute Christ for every mention made of love in that 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and you begin to see through a mirror dimly the love for which we were made. What is here called love, writes Dietrich Bonhoeffer in his Unfinished Ethics, is not this shorthand for a narrative. Death and resurrection. So says theologian Robert Jensen. Because seen from faith's viewpoint, death and resurrection is what love concretely means. The usual promises we make each other stop short because we accept the condition of death, because we reserve self-preservation. But to promise myself is to try to give up this reservation. Therefore, to love is to accept death. It is to give up my cautious claims to hanging on to myself. Especially at the heart of the division within Christ's church, is the cautious claim to hang on to the self, the wise self, the moral self, the righteous self, the secure self, the self that is, I'm right and everyone else is wrong, that I've got it and you can't have it self. Therefore, with the exception of Paul's first two positive words, love is patient, has a longer wind, and kind, a better translation would be fit. We are given a negative litany that nails the various ways in which we hang on to ourselves. The reason at the end of the day that selfishness wins. By our jealousy, boastfulness, arrogance, our rude behavior, by insisting on our own way, being irritable and resentful, rejoicing in the wrong rather than in the truth. We are so full of ourselves that we come to believe our love of the other exists only at the expense of ourselves. And indeed, it must. In fact, Paul would say, death is the only condition for love. Say that our jealous, boastful, arrogant, and rude selves must die, as Saul died on the road to Damascus. Ourselves, so sure we are right in the knowledge of God, must give way to the God who takes us by surprise because God is alive. The persons we think we are because of our cautious hold on all that we possess must be denied if we are ever to find the lives we have been destined to live in love. Ourselves, full of ourselves, must be emptied, even as Christ emptied himself and took on the form of a slave, of a servant. This is not a condition that we can reproduce by willing ourselves into it. Rather, if we love at all, we love because when we were jealous and boastful and arrogant and rude, irritable and resentful and insisting on our own way, God loved us first and is still loving our sorry selves to the end that we may all one day behold together God's love face to face. Well, until that day, and in the midst of a nation of people hell-bent on pursuing life, liberty, and happiness at the literal expense of the commonweal, how is the church to bear witness to the freedom that is freedom only as love, and the love that is love only as freedom? It is not insignificant that Paul speaks of the fruit of the Spirit in contrast to the works of the flesh. Gift, and the other a dubious human accomplishment. to distinguish us from the rest of the herd that snuffles and jostles at the great trough of life. I do not doubt that the Spirit was present and overflowing with the fruit that is love. I simply know within my own sin-sick soul that for all the stands taken, the resolutions passed, the opportunities missed, selfishness usually won. Paul even now would be penning a letter of admonishment about our biting and devouring and consuming one another. The only hope we have, then, is in him that commands us to love one another. For in him we have been given the love and the life and the freedom he commands of us, to the end that by his grace alone we might bear fruit, the fruit of the Spirit, that is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. As Paul says, there's no law against that. Until the Supreme Court or the General Assembly rules otherwise, there is no law against loving one another as Christ has loved us.